Welcome to your go-to Detroit Pistons podcast, The Pistons Pulse, co-hosted by me, Bryce Simon of Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys, a former D1 hooper, current high school coach, teacher, husband, and father of three amazing kids.
And I'm Amari Sacco for the second Pistons beat writer for Detroit Free Press.
Did we not have anything else this week? I feel like every week we go back and forth on Twitter about something you're going to... Maybe it was something I was going to add to mine this week. Sometimes I forget what the discourse and everything was between me and you and our intros on the podcast.
Yeah, there was something I was going to add, but I can't remember what it was. I didn't write it down, so I'm not going to worry about it. Maybe next week it'll come to mind or somebody will remind me on Twitter. I'll flesh it out. But I sat here, and while you were doing your intro, I was thinking there's something I was supposed to add to mine, but I can't remember what it is. So I'm just not going to do it.
I know. This was, I was like, I know. And now I'm very, very frustrated that I don't remember, because I do think it was pretty cool. So I don't remember what it was. With that said, of course, we're always blessed to be joined by our producer, the man behind the scenes. Guys, I can't emphasize this enough. We can't emphasize this enough. What Wes does for us as we have all these other things going on. He literally writes the outlines for us. He takes full control of it. He crushes it. And you will hear his beautiful voice later in the episode as we are bringing back everybody's favorite game, Sheet or Sham, and I know that's going to be a lot of fun. But Omari, we have another incredible rating and review. This is going to take me a little bit to get through, but this is from Riot Film, my absolute favorite basketball pod. Admittedly, I've become a consumer and fan of most of the Detroit Piston-related podcasts. This one has definitely become my absolute favorite Detroit basketball pod, hosted by Omari and Bryce, whose chemistry is absolutely phenomenal, and it really adds to the overall enjoyment of the show. They both have great knowledge and insight into the game of basketball, which allows them to break down players and teams in a way that is both entertaining and informative. It's clear that they have a passion for the basketball and journalism and the Pistons, and it really shows in their conversations. Bryce's basketball IQ and his ability to break down players in the game is second to none. His insights and knowledge of the game are both entertaining and informative. Bryce's player breakdown videos are a must-watch also. Above all, I love that the general tone of the podcast is upbeat and objective and not necessarily focused on the negative. I could only imagine how hard it must have been this season to deliver content for this show without a defeated or melodramatic attitude that many have taken on. So thank you for keeping up objective and hopeful. Though battered and bruised, my Stones fandom is alive and well, definitely detecting a quote-unquote pulse still. If you're a Pistons fan or a fan of basketball in general, then you won't want to miss this podcast. Highly recommended, Ryan Da Silva. Whew. I know that was a lot, Omari. It took me a little bit to get through it. But like, those are the best ones, man. We have the best listeners. We have the best fan base. It's not even close. I don't know if we're the most listened to podcast, but our listeners are the most loyal, the most insightful, the most thoughtful when leaving us ratings and reviews.
I mean, we've had a few reviews that were just really long and detailed, and it always surprises me to see that because... You know, like I like podcasts. I like content. I'm not necessarily waking up and writing, you know, two or three paragraphs about my favorite stuff. Maybe I should be doing that. People do it for us, and you know, definitely makes us feel good. So, I mean, again, if you enjoy the show, you haven't weighed in, feel free to leave us feedback, good or bad. Hopefully, good. But you know, we always love to hear what people think, what people say. And we just crossed a year of doing this too. So, you know, momentum strong. We're going to keep it going. And just thank you everybody for the support.
I just like to read those, Omari, because I want our listeners to know how much it really does mean to us. Like, I want you guys to know when you guys leave us a review, I screenshot it, I send it to Wes, I send it to Omari, and me and Omari literally talk about it. We send a text message thread back and forth and discuss how much it means to us. And I think one of the coolest things, Omari, is when people mention our chemistry, how much we've got to know each other, how well we work together. Wes is the same way. And I think it's sweet. Like, we really work at this. This matters to us. But on top, we've become good friends, like in real life. We talk about real life things, which I've, you know, discussed on the pod before. But I that always hits me too whenever they mention the chemistry you and I have and how that adds to the podcast.
Yeah, because that's a tough thing to judge, right? Like, you know, like obviously we've become great, great friends and, you know, I feel like our chemistry is good, but I guess you never know how things are being perceived from the outside. So the fact that that's always been a point of positive feedback for us definitely makes us feel good. And, you know, it makes me want to go deeper as well. Maybe at some point this offseason, we'll just do a completely non-basketball pod just to see how it goes, right? Going to some different directions. So again, thank everybody so much for the support. We're going to dive into today's episode and lead off with Jaden Ivey, who just came off a really strong month of February. March hasn't quite been what he was doing in February, but You know, first thing we are going to lead off with, you know, sort of the biggest event of the week, which was the ending of that Bulls game. And, you know, like, we know it was a mistake. We know that, you know, he's a rookie, yada, yada. You know, you still don't see those types of situations very often. I've been doing this about 5 years. That was probably first time I've seen that, you know, like at least live. You know, I guess, Bryce, what was your reaction watching from home when you see something like that happen?
So my first thought was Chris Webber, right? And I almost sent off a tweet and I was like, nope, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do that. And here's, Amari, did you realize the Chris Webber timeout was almost 30 years ago?
No, it was the year before I was born, I'm pretty sure. Like, I was born in 94. I think that was in 93. So that's just something I've always heard. I mean, being a born and raised Detroiter, I always heard about the lore of it, but was not actually alive for it. So, you know, to see that kind of come back to the forefront last week was definitely crazy.
Yeah, the thing that's always missed in that play, too, is he traveled at the beginning of the play. He had already turned the ball over at the beginning of the play, yeah, right before it started, before he dribbled down and called the timeout. My thought on the Jaden Ivey, here was my biggest takeaway, was that can't happen, right? Like, that can't happen. And also, just kind of knowing where a lot of the blame goes, my first thought was, I would almost guarantee it was repeated multiple times that they didn't have any timeouts by the coaching staff. I will just tell you this, as a high school coach, in those situations, we repeat it over and over and over. And as an assistant coach, that was definitely my job. Not only would I tell my guys how many timeouts we had left, I would tell them what the jump ball situation was. Now, that doesn't matter as much in the NBA, but if you know where the possession arrow is, if you have the possession arrow, a jump ball is okay. Like, maybe your guys are less likely to take a risky pass and they just allow the jump ball to happen, knowing that you'll keep control. So I have very little doubt that it was communicated to him that they didn't have any timeouts. And here's the other thing, Omari, I did tweet this out. The fan base saying that he was set up for failure is something I extremely disagree with. I'm not going to say, like,
I was going to get into that too. I'll let you cook first, and I was going to get into that.
I just disagree with that so much. If you don't think he can handle a simple sideline out of bounds decision, then how do you think this guy can run an offense, orchestrate a pick and roll, or anything else that will be asked of him? So that is something that I just did not understand. Now, that's a different argument, Omari, from should Killian Hayes have been in the game? Should Alec Burks been? Like, that's a separate conversation. Just simply saying that he was set up for failure by being asked to inbound a sideline out of bounds play, I just can't get behind that.
I agree. So to your first point, I would say it's also on the inbounder, just like, even if it wasn't brought up, like, how many timeouts you have, like, you're the inbounder, you should still probably know that, right? Like, that's part of the job of inbounding, is to know what your options are. And if he didn't know that, then there's still some personal accountability there as well. Like, maybe it wasn't mentioned, but it most, you know, we don't see that happen very often. So generally, players are able to figure that out. But to your second point, it definitely caught me off guard. And I was going to go back and forth, and I decided, you know what, I need to stop going back and forth with people, because it doesn't go anywhere. I'm wasting a lot of time. But there are people saying, like, not only what you brought up, but that, you know, they lost because Dwayne Casey left Corey Joseph in the game and this and that. And it was just like it's okay for there to be some personal accountability for the players. You know, like, when Jaden Ivey makes that blatant of a mistake, and, like, there are people in my mentions unironically arguing that it was a rotation mistake because Corey Joseph played, I think, the entire fourth quarter and this and that. And it's like, well, they were down, I think, 27 to 28, and he was on the floor during that entire comeback for the most part. So I don't necessarily see how him being on the floor was a problem when they got from, you know, down 27 to 28 to 2. So it was just a pretty simple inbounds play that had to be executed. And, like, I agree. It's just, you know, like, sometimes there are just situations where it was very clearly on the player, and we still somehow excuse the player and bring it back to Dwayne Casey making a mistake. And it's like, no, like, you know, it's just the player's job to go out there and inbounds the ball. Like, it's just some stuff that, you know, I don't necessarily see as, like, a coaching problem, where people were saying, why didn't the veterans make sure he knew what he was doing? And it's like, well, he's not to help, like, Jaden Ivey's not to help his child. You know, like, sometimes we tend to coddle the players and talk about them as though, you know, if you don't literally hold their hand and walk them through everything, that they're not going to be able to do it. And it's like, you know, the NBA, you know, they're all grown men. You got to be able to sink or swim. ultimately, it's just situations like that where it just kind of catches me off guard when there's like a reluctance to just say, hey, the player messed up.
Well, and why do we have to coddle him in the situation in general? He messed up. He made a huge mistake. He's going to grow and get better from it. Mm-hmm. So like, this is part of growth and development. Like, it's okay to fail. We all love to talk about these cliches and live behind these things of, you know, failure breeds, you know, improvement and all of these things. And then as fans, we see a young rookie fail and all of a sudden, oh, they should have incubated him. They should have coddled him. They should have made sure he wasn't in a situation to fail. Well, how is he ever going to grow? So like all around it, how do we know the sideline out of bounds play wasn't for him, Amari? How do we know that the sideline out of bounds play wasn't designed to get the ball back in his hands, him inbound, run right off the screen, whatever? I'm not saying it is. We don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that was crazy that he was set up for failure. That was my only thing. Again, if you want to say Killian should have been in the game because he's the best passer, I don't disagree. I'm just saying that to say that Jaden's not capable of doing it, I just can't agree with that. And to your point, they had found a flow and rhythm, right? This is a hard thing to do as a coach. They had found a flow with that unit. And do I think he should have subbed? I do, Amari. But I also know as a coach, sometimes those decisions are hard and you're like, man, this five has brought us back. I'm going to roll with them. We feel like they've earned the right to do that.
And that's what Dwayne tends to do. If there's a unit that's rolling, he just lets them cook. He's not going to tinker with something that's working. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think in situations like that, you're not necessarily judged by the game management, but the result, right? So you can let a unit cook and they bring you all the way back until like 10 seconds left and then you lose. And it's like, oh, well, he made a mistake. It's like, yeah, well, you know, he could have made a sub and he still could have lost, you know? Like, we don't know that for a fact. Like, they got all the way back, so clearly something was working. So, you know, and I also want to say along with all of that, that, you know, we did talk to Jaden after the game. And, you know, like, one, just kudos to him for, you know, sitting down and talking to the media in the locker room. Like, sometimes guys will hide in the back, not come out with the media out in that scenario. And he came out.
I love that. I'm glad you were able to bring that up. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, you know, and he did, and like I asked him a question, like we talked to him, and you know, he owned up to it. Like, no, he obviously wasn't happy, and you know, it was a pretty quick availability. We probably talked to him for like 3 or 4 minutes, but still, like, he answered the questions. He took full accountability. He said, "I should have known." You know, he said, "I lost this the game, this and that." And Bogey and Dwayne Casey after the game were, you know, saying like the game was a loss on that play. You know, like protecting him, obviously. You know, Bogey said, we as best coach, we have to make sure he knows what to do in that scenario. But Jaden was like, no, like I messed up. Like it was my fault. You know, I can't do that. I need to know better. Yada, yada. And he came in and he owned up to it. And, you know, I think that's just the kind of person he is. Like he's talked after losses this season and, you know, just said we have to be better as a unit. And I think he's the type of guy that kind of wears his heart and his emotions on his sleeve too. Which, you know, you kind of see in that moment, right? Like he clearly took that, you know, fake timeout really, really hard. You know, he just covered his face as he walked off the court, this and that. You know, it's clearly a massive deal for him. And, you know, and also credit to him, or I guess not really credit to anybody because it reflects how bad the Pistons are. But, you know, that's not a Chris Webber situation quite because, you know, Chris Webber is in like, you know, the biggest game in his life. And this is like a random, you know, February or March game. The Pistons are 15 wins. So nobody will be thinking about this, you know, by the end of the season. Honestly, there's probably people who forgot already and listened to this episode on Tuesday and be like, oh, well, I forgot about this and now I'm thinking about it again. But hey, we're going to be court once a week and we have to dive into it. And we're going to talk about some of the growth that Jaden Ivey's had.
Yeah, let's get to the positive stuff. I don't think we meant to get off on that much. I do want to say real quick, I do think that speaks to the culture a little bit. Everybody talks about why is Dwayne Casey still here, this and that. And I realize it's a 15-win team, Amari. I know, but could you imagine if that happened with Jalen Green and the Rockets? Like, I don't mean to crush another team, but what do you think guys on that team would have said, what the storylines would have been? I love that in this situation, one, Jaden Ivey takes responsibility. I love Bojan Bogdanović and how he handled it, how Coach Casey handled it. To me, that is proof of that there is a certain culture that has been built. And I do like that because I think there's some other teams that would have been like insane coverage. It wouldn't have been positive at all. And I just wanted to bring that up real quick. But you're right. We need to talk about how well he's been playing because that's what this segment was supposed to be about.
So Jaden, February was his best month probably that he's played yet. And I have his numbers up now. He averaged 16.4 points. He shot 44.5% overall. Obviously, which is great. 42% from three, 41.9 technically. 5.8 assists against 2.6 turnovers. So, you know, he's dishing, you know, about 2 assists for every turnover, which is fantastic. Actually, a little bit better than that, which is great. And, you know, I think we've just kind of seen, really since the beginning of January, that he's kind of turned the corner as far as being more of a lead guard and lead playmaker rather than just this really athletic and quick sort of off-ball guy that you kind of just want to regulate into making more simple decisions. Like, I think he's really grown up a lot as a primary playmaker. And I would say he's probably done more in this last month to convince me that he can, like McKay's on the bench next season, that you can just leave Ivy in at the one and put him with Burks, or like, let's say they draft a wing, you have him at the two or whoever, that could work. That could work. Like, I'm fully buying into him as a primary guy. And while he's probably not ever going to be like, you know, like the best passer in the NBA, I think he'll be good enough, like maybe Derrick Rose level, or just good enough to where you know that he can do it and create plays and be really, really good out there.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. And I thought I was high on Jaden Ivey, and I thought I was high on Jaden Ivey's passing, but he's exceeded my expectations. And we've talked about this. The only place he hasn't been what I was hoping for was on the defensive end. And I will say, the effort level, and he's flashed and put some possessions together since the All-Star break, where even it's like, at least there's some growth now, man. At least we're seeing him a possession here and there where it's like, okay, Jaden, we can work with this and we can grow from this. Offensively, Omari, it's not even close. He has exceeded what I felt like were high expectations. I know some people would disagree because of what the episode where we predicted what his stat line would be. He's been incredible. 42% from three during the entire month is insane for a guy who everybody said can't shoot. The mid-range has been far beyond what I ever could imagine. I will tell you this. There's a lot of people who I really respect, who I really like, who have been hard on Jaden Ivey, and even they are giving him his flowers right now for how he's playing. And I think the best thing is he has shown that ability to control his pace and change direction, change speed, play with some nuance in the ball screens. I'm with you. I didn't know if he was ever like, hey, we got to stagger because he needs to just completely run the show. But that's where he's at right now, right? Like, if we go into next season and it's not Scoot and you have Cade and Ivy, I think you play Ivy for 6 minutes next to Cade, and then you take Ivy out, and then he's essentially the second unit point guard.
No, absolutely. Like, you could stagger them, I think, for 48 minutes and get above average playmaking the entire time down. And two very different types of playmaking, mind you, right? Like, Cade does not have Ivy's athleticism, so he's going to, you know, probe and prod a lot more, whereas Ivy's just going to make a quick decision to get downhill and even dump the ball off for his body in the corner, which, you know, I really like the two passes he probably makes the most, like you see when he's in there with an athletic big man, Duren Wiseman. He just naturally gels with those types of players a lot more than he does with a guy like Isaiah Stewart, where it's going to be more pick and pop. Like, there's like an awkwardness between them that you don't see with Duren and Wiseman, which I think bodes well. It's like, okay, so you just have two of your best athletes on the floor at all times, and they play well with each other. Like, that's a pretty good situation, right? But I also want to just shout out his shooting because he was sort of advertised, and he really is like this downhill player, and the numbers reflect that. But he attacks. He is more comfortable attacking the game as a shooter than I expected. If the defense is going under, he has no qualms at all, just like taking threes and like those pull-up twos. And you don't necessarily see that from super athletic guards as much. Like, we don't see John Morant take those jumpers as much. But we do see Westbrook take those pull-ups a lot. And I, like, long-term, maybe you hope Ivy's a little bit better at it than Westbrook's been. But I will say this, in the month of February, among our rookies, Jaden Ivey was third in attempts with 4.8. Only Malachi Branham and Keegan Murray were ahead of him. Percentage-wise... This is just three-pointers?
Oh, wow,
he was third in three-point attempts among our rookies. And his percentage... if you talk about guys who are taking more than four, or at least four, the only guy who shot the three better in that span was your guy, Agbaji, who knocked down 44%. But he shot the ball better than Branham. He shot the ball better than Keegan. He shot the ball better than Jabari Smith, who, of course, has struggled this season. But also, like, a guy like Benedict Mathurin, you know, whose three-point percentage has kind of fallen off of a cliff. He's shooting 31%. You know, we're at the point where Ivy, like, he's just holding his own amongst the best shooters in his draft class. Like, Keegan Murray, Bowser, like, these are guys that we do can shoot the ball. We didn't know Ivy could in last month. And I have to look at his numbers all the way from New Year's as well, but he's been up there with the best shooters of his class.
And I think what that does is it allows him to be more effective in every play type Amari. Because one thing I was worried about is people would just go under the ball screen on him and just force him to take that shot. Well, if he can step behind and make it, okay, well, now you got to go over the top. And then I was worried they'll just play deep drop coverage on him with the big, force him to take the mid-range jumper. Well, now he's shown an ability to stop and pop and make that mid-range shot. So now you have to guard him at all three levels because he's able to make shots with some sort of effectiveness. And it also makes him effective off the ball. If he's running off a staggered screen, you can't just cheat it and say, okay, well, you can catch and shoot the three. If you got to trail him, well, then he's going to curl it, get downhill, and good luck. I never thought I would be saying this, Amari, that I think the biggest area of improvement for him offensively is actually finishing at the rim. He's getting there, but he just missed so many of those easy ones. And at the end of the day, though, I would rather that be what we're talking about right now than, man, the three-point shooting's at 25% or he's only taking one mid-range jumper a game. I think the area that I think he could improve in the easiest is finishing at the rim. And so I'm cool with what we've seen so far. Like I said, I'm ecstatic.
And I think some of the finishing, it may be a touch issue, but I think some of that's just like his ball handling as well, where he doesn't necessarily gather himself properly. He takes off too early or too late, or he's just... I just think there's a comfort level with how fast he gets downhill that he does not have yet. That I think in all seasons of work, just handling the ball, right? Like just do some Kyrie Irving drills, just do something just to get, just more comfortable with that. And I think we could, I think he just speeds himself up too much on a lot of those drives. Like even the first play last night, the Pistons, right after the opening tip, Ivy gets downhill, he gets the ball, and he tries to beat the Cavs up. The court, and I think that first shot attempt was like 4 or 5 seconds into the game, but Ivy missed the layup at the rim. And we see that happen not every game, but maybe every other game where he's got a layup that he just got to hit that he just doesn't. So that is sort of the irony in that, like, you know, he's become so comfortable as a shooter that the downhill aspect actually hasn't been as strong as maybe we expected. Like, he's getting down there, his percentage at the rim is still solid, but there's definitely another tier he could get to, and that's actually my biggest growth area for him as well. Like, you can knock down shots. Now you have to punish teams when they are going over their screens, right, and actually be the downhill force that we know you could be, and that's who showed at Purdue.
So you mentioned some of these guys. Before we move on to James Wiseman and RJ Hampton, some of the other guys on the Pistons, let's talk about Jaden Ivey in the context of Rookie of the Year and even All-Rookie First Team. So you have Paolo, you have Walker Kessler in Utah, who's had a great season, the Jalen Williams, the one, I don't know what his nickname is. There's two Jalen Williams in Oklahoma City, and they have different nicknames, but the Santa Clara Jalen Williams is how I think about him, the more perimeter oriented Jalen Williams. You have Keegan Murray, who's had a really good year, and then Benedict Mathurin. So there's six guys, and there's only five spots on our rookie team. And obviously there's only one, I guess there could be co-rookies of the year, but really one rookie of the year. So where do you think Jaden Ivey is filling into those? Because I've legit heard people who are high on him, but still have him sixth. So essentially people saying, hey, he would be our second team all rookie, let alone even in the rookie of the year conversation.
I have his numbers since the beginning of January up, and I just read these off just to sort of paint how good he's been relative to the rest of his class, right? So he's third in scoring, 15.7 points. Ben Math and Paolo are higher than him. This is also his New Year's. Jaden's efficiency is actually higher than a lot of his classmates, right? So he's at 43%. Ben Math's at 44%. Paolo's at 40% since New Year's. And also Jaden Ivey shot the three ball. If you're like, to my point earlier, since New Year's, Jaden Ivey is shooting 36.8% on 4.3 attempts. Keegan Murray's been lights out. He's like almost 45% on like six attempts. So he's been in his own category. But Ivey is, you know, comparing volume and accuracy, he's shooting the ball better than Jabari Smith. He's shooting the ball better than Paolo, Branham, Johnny Juzang, AJ Green. Well, okay. AJ Green shooting the higher.
I mean, AJ Green, that's what he does, though. Like, his only role is to come in and knock down three pointers.
And that's what he does. But Ivy has held his own. He's leading guard rookies in assists, I think, on the season period, not just since New Year's. Like, he's just been all around good. I think what is going to end up happening with Ivy is sort of what we got into with Cade last year, where you have rookies who are playing smaller roles for better teams. And because their plus minus is like a minus two instead of a minus eight or nine or whatever Ivy's is, because he plays for a 15-win team, I think a lot of those guys are going to end up being in better shape when it comes to those awards. Like Paolo, like Ivy had a better February than Paolo. And I think that's pretty objective, right? Like, that's not just me being a guy who watches the Pistons and doesn't watch Orlando as much. You look at their numbers, Jaden Ivey basically did everything at a higher level, scoring-wise, efficiency-wise, he shot better. He's already a better playmaker than Vaccaro is. but he did not get Ricky at a muff. Ben Carroll got Ricky at a muff for the East, and Orlando was a better team than the Pistons in that stretch. And we're already seeing that happen, right? Like kind of with Scotty Barnes and Evan Mobley and Cade last year, where I think you can just make an argument on his face that those guys maybe deserve those accolades as well. But, you know, you're just seeing, you know, these players get penalized for playing for bad teams, which personally, that's not my metric for how I evaluate rookies. I think that's kind of silly, but I think we're just starting to see that already. And we're going to see, like, Walker Kessler, he's a shoe-in for the first team. I'll just say that right now. Ben Carroll is a shoe-in for the first team. And it's, you know, and they deserve that. I'm not saying that they don't. You know, like, Walker Kessler has probably been the second-best rookie over the course of the entire season after Ben Carroll. But once you get into, like, the Andrew Nembhards, the Jalen Williams, like, these guys who are playing good minutes for good teams, that's probably going to hurt Jaden. And really, it'll probably... Jabari Smith's the guy who hasn't had that good of a season. He's probably going to get wrecked when it comes to that, but I think it's going to hurt Jaden Ivey.
I think Paolo's probably still rookie of the year. Kessler's been incredible. He's been really good. I think, I don't know that he's like a lock at number two. I'm sure there's arguments. You made some really good arguments and brought up stats where I think you could argue that Jaden Ivey is, you know, second. But I think a lot of people right now feel like it's Paolo, Kessler, and then it's, again, four guys for three spots in Ivy, Ben Math, Murray, and Jalen Williams. And it's just going to be interesting. And it's funny how it's very similar to Cade, where my argument for Cade in terms of rookie of the year last year was who was being asked to be the face of the franchise like Cade is. Well, same thing. Ben Math is coming off the bench every game. Keegan Murray has been really good. And I saw that sly smile you had there, Wes. I know you're a big Keegan Murray guy whenever Omari was giving those numbers. So don't think I missed that. But in fairness, he has De'Aaron Fox having a career year, Domantas Sabonis playing incredible. Like, his role is not even close to the same of what Jaden Ivey's being asked. Same with Jalen Williams, who, when SGA is playing, SGA has been like a, I don't know, top 15 player in the NBA, maybe even higher, maybe a top 10. He's been insane when he's playing. So it is going to be an interesting debate, and probably a lot will come down to how Ivey finishes off the year. But at the end of the day, he's been incredible. Very exciting to see how good he's been, especially in the offensive end and then some of the defense that's come around. But we do have to get to a short break here, Omari. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about newly acquired James Wiseman, RJ Hampton, and some of the other guys around the roster.
All right, we're back with segment two, and we're going to dive right into James Wiseman. And I wrote about this on Friday, actually, for Saturday, that he's had a bigger role maybe than we knew he would play, but I think for him to start their last four games, for Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren being out, that's the type of thing you can't really predict. And I'll let you lead the segment off, but I guess if you're looking at what Wiseman's done well so far, what are some of the things that come to mind immediately for you and just what we've seen over the last 2 weeks or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, he's been what I thought he was after doing some of my dive into film and scout and all of that stuff. And that's a good and bad thing, Omari. It's a good thing in that he's shown the things we thought he could do. He is athletic. He's long. He's 7 foot. He's actually been rebounding the ball decently. Two games of his six with the Pistons, he had 10 rebounds. Two games, he's had 9. So, but we've also seen the deficiencies with the rebounding. Offensively, you can see where he can be a bucket. I mean, he had a 23-point game on 11 shots, but we haven't seen some of the stuff I was hoping to see. That the shot hasn't necessarily looked great. He has taken 1 3 in every game, so he is 1 of 6 with the Pistons. He's taken some mid-range shots, made a couple, missed a couple. I would like to see him just be used a little bit more on the perimeter. Let's see what his ability to put the ball on the deck is. We've seen, I think, 1 or 2 transition, like grab-and-go opportunities. The defense, again, it is what it is. I thought we've seen some good ball screen coverage possessions, and then we've seen some, where he struggled, and then just the off-ball awareness in general. So, like I say, in a sense, he has been what I thought, and that's a good thing, but also a little bit frustrating. The one thing I do like, Omari, is in Detroit, you're seeing him get the opportunities the Warriors fans didn't feel like he was getting, which is playing through some of these struggles. And whenever he doesn't play effectively, he's getting to continue to play with Detroit.
I would say offensively, like, he has been good. Like, his post game is good. Like, he's got some shooting stroke. And, you know, but the efficiency probably hasn't been there that you would want to see. He takes a lot of shots from short mid-range. And I think he's taken like 5 threes so far. He's only made 1. That hasn't necessarily been there. And I want to bounce this off of you. Like, the more I watch James Wiseman, I don't necessarily see a center. I see a guy who's like kind of like that hybrid 4-5 that you see in guys like John Collins or Jaren Jackson Jr., where like on paper they have center skills, but just the things that they're deficient in with James Wiseman, like he can rebound, but like he's probably not like that Jalen Duren tier rebounder. And because he does have some shooting stroke, he does kind of strike me offensively as a guy who might be able to play next to a more traditional five, assuming that shot comes around, because that is a shot that he kind of hunts out naturally. And I think that just kind of positions him better rather than maybe being more of a pulse-oriented guy. Although along with that, I would say that they do miss some easy layup opportunities too, that he probably should be scoring above a bit better than he has been as well.
Yeah, man, I keep going back and forth, Amar. I think my biggest frustration right now is I haven't seen those four-man skills come to fruition like I was hoping to see. The shot hasn't... I'm still not sure I buy the shot. How do you feel about the shot? Because, like, if I had to... So I did the Twitter poll on who you would trust more to make a shot. I think between Wiseman, Bagley, Duren, and I think I put Hami in there just to have some fun. And the fan base actually said Wiseman. I think I would go Marvin Bagley III right now. Where would you be on that? Because I don't know why I'm struggling to get there with the shot, but I don't feel like I trust it. I don't know why.
I think Bagley is a more comfortable looking shooter.
Yes.
And he's also not efficient as well.
Agreed.
But I think with Bagley, there's probably a bit more of, and I don't want to say James Wiseman second guesses, but I think there's just more familiarity with, I think Bagley's just more comfortable. He's been here a year, like his teammates are doing yada yada. And with Wiseman, there's still a lot of not exactly knowing what this guy can do, like from his teammates. So I think that just some of that uncertainty or just like that discomfort reflects in how he shoots, where, maybe there's like he takes a lot of shots that are not like this pick and pop is for me. It's like, I don't see anything else, so I'm just shoot, right? And there is a difference in that where, maybe you don't feel as confident the shot's going in when there's that moment of hesitation, like, all right, I guess I'm just going to take this shot, which I think we've seen a lot of. And that will correct itself down the road. Like, he just got here. Like, players have been out, like, maybe just from a comfort level. He hasn't had the perfect environment for him to just get going, even though he's also been starting. So there's a mix of a lot of things going on right now. But I also say that, if we're just going over the entire roster, I don't know if I want either of those guys taking that shot. But I probably would lean Bagley just because there is more of a certainty with what you get from him.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at with it. We saw the two big lineups, so I'm interested to see what you thought about that on Saturday. I told you before we record, I've watched the game, the whole game. I was at a high school basketball game. My season ended, and I went and watched the championship game of the teams that were left because it was here in the town that I live in. But I had the Pistons game on my phone while I was watching as well. So I was, because I wanted to be able to catch that and make sure I watched the game before we recorded. And so I'd be interested in what you thought of the two big lineup. I'm sure the fan base, I wasn't on Twitter. Wes was running Twitter. So if he tweeted anything you didn't like, blame him on the Motor City Hoops account. That was Wes's fault. But I was just curious what you thought of that, because the scoring wasn't great. And so I could imagine that a lot of people were upset with the spacing and that two big lineup. But what did you think about it?
So I actually thought in the first half, like, it was fine. And they started together, Bagley and Wiseman, and then they had to be staggered. So I don't know exactly how many minutes they played together total, but I would guess it was probably not more than like 8, just because they went to that stagger pretty early with just no big men depth being behind them. But they won the rebounding battle against Cleveland, which was good, because I think they got crushed when they played in Cleveland a few weeks ago, right before the trade deadline. And that's something that Dwayne Casey brought up after the game. Like, if we're going to play two bigs, we need to see more results from that. And also, I'm pretty sure Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart were in that game. So, slightly different personnel. Wiseman wasn't around. But Wiseman didn't score the ball extremely well. I think he was only 1-for-6. But he did have 8 rebounds just in the first half alone. And, the Pistons, they fell behind 8 early. And then they went on a run. And they got within 2. And then Cleveland turned up the gas a little bit more and closed out. But, just the Pistons not getting crushed on the boards, not giving up a lot of second chance opportunities, helped them stay competitive early. And that's what you want to see, right? Like, offensively, Bagley and Wiseman do have a lot of overlap, and it kind of forces one or both of those guys to space out a bit more, which I think long term, I probably just feel more comfortable with Wiseman doing that than Bagley, only because we don't know for a fact that Wiseman can't shoot. At this point, we know that Bagley, unless he comes back next offseason, is hitting like 35%. It's only going to be an occasional thing for him. But just on a baseline level, for everything you give up starting them together, I thought it was fine. And this could kind of segue us into Wiseman's defense as well. But I think what kind of makes that easier too is that Wiseman can handle different assignments. Like, you could put him against a guy like an Evan Mobley, who, you know, is a lot more mobile than a guy like Jared Allen, can spread out a little bit and feel pretty good about it. And I think that Wiseman, as long as he could be more of like that roamer type of big man defender, continue to get better at that, that you could probably plug him in next to whoever and feel pretty good about it, at least on defense.
So to your point, they had 22 rebounds and then they combined for 7 steals and blocks. They each had a steal, and then Bagley had 3 blocks and Wiseman had 2 blocks. So 5 blocks. I mean, here's the other thing is you throw out that lineup and you do it against one of the best big man lineups in the league. So, you know, it's not like it was just against some random team. It was against the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are really good and, you know, who are the prototype for making this work with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So I thought it was interesting. I thought defensively in the first half it worked. Wiseman ended up only playing 23 minutes. So that was kind of interesting in general. I think offensively, that's where I really wanted to watch it, Omari, was offensively. And I tried to watch the Cavs as well to see where the Cavs guards were getting their shots. And the more I thought about it, the more I'm not that bothered by them playing, like you said, 8 to 10 to 12 minutes a game together, because is it going to hurt the ability for like Ivy and then next year Cade getting to the rim? Yes, but where does Cade really cook? He cooks in the mid-range anyway. So those guys being on the floor together doesn't necessarily keep you from getting to 10 to 12 feet. Where it keeps you from getting is all the way to the rim. Well, Cade can cook in the mid-range. Even Killian, where is Killian the best right now? If you had to, you know, put an attempt for Killian where he's most successful, it's probably in the mid-range. It's not getting all the way to the rim. I do know that. And we just talked about earlier where Jaden Ivey has been better in that as well. I'm not saying you want 48 minutes of that kind of spacing, but watching the Cavs guards, I felt like Garland and Mitchell in half-court setting had to settle for a lot of pull-up jumpers, whether threes or mid-range, whatever it was. And those guys were just better at it right now than Killian and Ivy were. But I don't think it's like just so detrimental if those are the shots you have to settle for because you have two bigs on the floor.
And I'll bring up that Kate, when he had that hot streak before he got hurt, like, he was automatic for mid-range. Like, he could not hit a three for some reason, but like, he was shooting like 80% from mid-range. And you know, and that's his game. Like, we saw that last year too, that he is a guy that could just kind of find those pockets and step into them. And we're also seeing Killian and Ivy do that a lot this season as well. So it could work. Like, Bradley, I do think the Cavs are a pretty good model for what the Pistons could be next season. You have 2 starting bigs. I think Durant can do a lot of the same stuff Jared Allen can do. I think that, you know, either Wiseman or Isaiah Stewart could give you some approximation of what you get from Mobley. Maybe not from a passing standpoint, but at least from a, like, spacing the floor a little bit more, kind of roaming, not meaning to paint as much, but you can if you need to, or, you know, just handle different assignments. And then you have Donovan Mitchell, who is a guy that, like, if Jaden Ivey becomes everything he can become, like, I think Donovan Mitchell is a pretty good comparison for that type of player. And then you have Darius Garland, who is just a really, like, good shooter, like, crafty guard, kind of like Cade. And you just kind of see the outline for, like, how that could work, right? And the Cavs are a pretty good team this year. So as long as those guys can shoot, like, it can work. And it's more so just about the positional versatility you get from all of that as well. So, like, I like that a lot. Like, I'm talking about this, and it just sucks, again, the case that, you know, playing the season, because there's just so much stuff we could have figured out that we got to wait till next season. But just being able to knock down those shots really is key in that scenario.
Yeah, so I think that's a big thing. Whenever it's Bagley and Wiseman together, there's just not a whole lot of passing between those two. And so I think that's why there's a better chance that Wiseman and Duren work, because of how much I believe in Duren's passing. And I do want to say, I feel like Marvin Bagley III has been playing really well, Omari. I don't know what you feel. And I even had people like blowing up my phone, non-Pistons fans that I've just like come to get to know. And they're like, man, Bagley looks good. Even some Warriors fans who I've got to know who were probably watching for Wiseman, but Bagley actually popped off the screen to him as they were watching that game. I think he's looked good since his return from injury. Looks like he's athletic and moving well. And so, but I do think passing is important, and then again, always the shooting. Here's my thing. Can Wiseman at least play in the corner, catch, knock down the occasional corner three, or catch, attack a closeout, or learn how to cut? Because here's the thing, Omari. We don't talk about this. Hami's playing at the four all the time. It's essentially the same thing. Hami's a 6'5" version of these guys. He can't shoot. He hasn't made a three in how long? So it's the same idea. It's just you're getting a 7-foot or 6'10" version of Hami instead. So I do think it does cause some issues in terms of getting all the way to the rim. The pick and roll stuff is a little bit different because you can't run pick and roll and throw a lob if you have a guy in the dunker spot also, like the spacing on that. So I don't think you can play it for 48 minutes, but I want to see more of it. Like I walked away, like I want to see more of it to really dive into the film and see how it worked.
I didn't see it. You mentioned Marvin Bagley playing well. I just want to shout him out real quick. In his four games since he came back, 17.5 points, 13 rebounds, 1.3 blocks, shooting 55.8% overall. So he's been, like, I think sort of the ideal version of like what you could risk to get from Marvin Bagley since he came out. Like after that first game, he returned for, and you know, Dwayne said, we need this Marvin every night, right? Where he had 21 points, 18 rebounds. Well, he had 20 and 13 last night, 21 and 12 the game after that. Even that game against Chicago, and like he only had 8 points and 9 rebounds in that. But, you know, still, like for 18 minutes, that's pretty good. And he only took 5 shots in that game as well. So he's been good. And we're getting kind of off topic from, you know, Wiseman, but I did want to shout out Marvin Bagley as well. So let's just really quickly talk about RJ Hampton because he, like, you did not watch last night's game. So
I watched it, but I say it wasn't as like in depth as what I normally would, you know, where I'm taking notes. Like I was distracted. So, and Wes was sending me notes, but yeah, it was his best game, I guess.
Yeah. Like he did some stuff that was good. Like he knocked out a three. He had some good plays, which, you know, like was good to see. He also had that pretty bad stretch where he inbounded the ball after he got the inbounds pass. And like, that was a really bad like turnover. He did hit a three on the next possession to kind of make up for it. But then he's on like one corner and he tries to attempt a quarter to quarter pass to Livers that just came well short. And I think even Mitchell Garland got a bucket on the other end from that. And, you know, it's tough. Cause like we've seen RJ Hampton for, you know, I think 4 games now, but I don't know if we've really seen what he could do. You know, he hasn't recorded a lot of assists. Like, I think he only has 2 assists with the Pistons. Like, he's turned the ball over. Like, he had 4 turnovers last night. Like, I'm not, like, I want to hear what your thoughts on him because I just don't know if I've seen a lot from him just in the week or week and a half he's been here so far.
Yeah, I tweeted out the other day, Amari, I don't even notice him on the court. And that's actually in a bad way. Like, I just, and when I do notice him, it's like, What is he doing? Why is he doing that? Or why isn't he doing this? It hasn't been impressive. Now, to your point, he's joining the team as a buyout guy. The contract for next year is non-guaranteed. So there's no promises whatsoever he's on the team next year. It was worth it, right? This is exactly what Troy Weaver should be doing. And so like he should be recycling the roster any chance he gets, open roster spot, do those things. But I haven't seen it or seen even some flashes where I'm like, okay, they can work with that. If we could get some more consistency with that, I like it. Like right now, my opinion would be you don't guarantee that contract and you let him walk in free agency and you go find a better replacement. That's where I'm at right now. Now there's still what, 15, 16, you know, 20, what is there, 20 games left, something like that, a month of basketball?
Yeah, it's like 18 games left or so around that.
Yeah. So, like, there's still time. And again, he's only 4 or 5 games into it. That's a really good point. And it does take some time to acclimate yourself to a team and to a roster and all those things. I just, right now, it's just been pretty meh for me with RJ Hampton.
Yeah, like, I think that's probably the best way to put it. It's just been pretty meh. And, you know, for a player who's, like, as athletic as he is and kind of came into the league with, he was a little bit of a mystery box, right? Like we could develop him and there's probably different outcomes for the type of player he can become, but he's got a really good base skill set to work with. I just think in the last week or week and a half or so, you want to see some sort of like, what is his NBA skill? And we just haven't seen that yet. He hasn't shot the ball particularly well. He did have 11 points against Cleveland, you know, in a game that was pretty much a blowout at before the halfway mark. And I just haven't necessarily seen what is his skill that's going to keep him, not just with the Pistons, but, you know, just on an NBA team at some point. And that's kind of what he needs to show, right? Like, what is he going to do that allows us to play him with Killian or allows us to play him with Jaylen? Like, what does he bring that's a complimentary skill? And we just haven't seen that.
Yeah, because even someone like Hami's a good point of that, Amari. Like, the skill set isn't great, but he brings energy and athleticism and he gets stuff done. And right now, if you ask me, what is the thing that AJ Green, we brought up the random name, AJ, you know what AJ Green does? He shoots the ball really, really well. And if you ask me, what does RJ Hampton do really, really well? I don't have an answer for you. But we got to take another short break here, and then we're going to play your guys' favorite game. We're going to bring Wes on, and we're going to play some Sheet or Sham, and we're going to have some fun, Omari.
All right. We are back with our final segment, and we're going to bring our guy Wes Davenport into the fold to lead us into some Sheet or Sham, which I don't think we've done in a couple months here.
It's been a while, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a bit. And it's been so long, I actually lost the note of who won last time. So do either of you remember?
I'm sure it was me. Like, there's very little Bryce. Doubt. Was it really
it was
me?
Bryce.
Okay, let's go.
It was Bryce. I can't. Yeah, I remember.
There's no way Omari actually. What day is it, Omari? What day is it right now?
Oh, today's Sunday. I know
what What is the about. Date? What is the date?
It's March 5th. It's March 5th.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. He's getting better. He's growing.
It's March 5th. Yeah. You know, it's like, this is the late part of the season. So I have nothing to do except check the time and weather. So, and what day it is, what day of the week it is. This is what I do in March. You asked me in December, I don't know what's going on. This time of the year, I know what's going on.
That means I'll be out there in a month, Omari. 1 month from, I believe it was yesterday or the day before. Me and Randy will be out in Detroit for a handful of days. So
marking the days, Don.
All right, Wes, what do you got for us today?
Well, so great. So Omari remembered. So we know the standings then. Bryce, you've got 2 wins. Omari, you've got 3. First question, pull it up on the screen here. According to just an obscure Wikipedia fact, the Pistons' first ever home arena was a local high school gym in Fort Wayne.
Where's Keith Black Trudeau whenever you need him? I feel like I should know this because I've recorded like 5 hours of podcasts of Pistons history with Keith. I'm going to say Sham.
Well, I'm going to go see. Like this, I have no idea. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I know a lot about the Fort Wayne Pistons. I'm going to go see. It just, that just seems like a Fort Wayne thing. I don't know. Like, that's just... Like, if I had to come up, like, if I had to invent a basketball team that started off in Indiana, like, 80 years ago, like, that's just a nice, quaint beginning, right? This high school gym, and now they play, now they're, you know, one of the winningest NBA franchises ever. Like, it's probably where I would name Sheed.
It is Sheed. It was a Northside High School gym. It only sat 3,000 people. First ever arena.
I love Omari. We talk about our reviews and how in-depth they are. Look at this is why Omari appreciates it so much, because look how in-depth he thinks about these Sheet or Sham questions.
I kind of just go off of the vibe, honestly. Like, I don't know. I go off of the vibe of the question. This question had a Sheet vibe because that's just a very, to me, that just sounds like a Fort Wayne thing. Like, this professional basketball team starting off in high school.
I want to see your hands from now on during the questions. Make sure you're not over there on the cell phone.
No, my phone is safely over here.
All right, next one up. I didn't know if this would be a gimme or not, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Sheed or Sham, Omari, the last Pistons playoff win was actually in the Eastern Conference Finals.
That's Sheed. I know that's a Sheed because, well, I'm not going to say why I know. I'm just going to go Sheed.
He sounds very confident, and as many of you know, I haven't been a Pistons fan for much longer than 2 years. I do know the last time they were in the playoffs, they got swept, right? The Blake Griffin good season, they got swept in the first round. So I do know that, but I don't know the playoff appearance before. But Omari sounds very confident, and I want to tie this up overall. So I'm going to go Sheet as well.
It is Sheet. Yep. They were playing the Celtics.
2008.
And like I said, I thought that was probably an easy one. The next like few series were all sweeps, two of which to the Cavs and one to, that was Milwaukee.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yep, that was the loss to the Celtics where the Celtics ended up winning the championship. And I just remember that whole offseason, everybody's like, something's got to happen, right? Like, they've got to trade Chauncey, or they got to break this core up, because I think that was the fifth or sixth. That was the fifth year in a row, I'm pretty sure, that they fell short. Fourth year in a row that they fell short in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then, you know, of course, they won in 04 and 05. But yeah, it's been a very bleak period since that. So that's still pretty fresh in my mind.
All right, next up, this one is not Pistons related. So, and Bryce, I'll be asking it to you first. So, according, again, to Wikipedia, There's only been one soundtrack to achieve the title of the best-selling album of the year since the year 2000. And that soundtrack was The Greatest Showman in 2018.
I don't even understand the question. What soundtrack? Aren't they all soundtracks?
Like a movie soundtrack.
Oh,
a movie soundtrack.
Whatever. Well, I've never seen that movie. Know what soundtrack is dope is Space Jam, the original Space Jam. Man, I love that soundtrack.
The movie was saved entirely by the soundtrack. I tried watching Space Jam a few years ago, and I watched this movie every day when I was a kid. Like, I loved it. When I watched it as an adult, I kind of realized the movie sucks, but the soundtrack is still great. So the soundtrack carries the movie.
That's because you're an adult now. It was a movie made for kids.
But
when you were a kid, of course you're going to hate it as an adult. It's like,
but there's stuff you watch as a kid that ages great. Like most Pixar movies when I was a kid, I've aged phenomenally. Like Toy Story was another movie I watched almost every day. And we watched it as an adult a few years ago. Actually, it was like a year or two ago. Like, it was pretty recent. But still, Toy Story is just as good today as it was like when it came out like 30 years ago. Like, that is an A-plus movie. Still a rock-solid script. I actually enjoyed parts of it more as an adult than I did as a kid. Like, it was a different movie in some ways because there was something over my head. So that's – I'm not going to give Space Jam the benefit of the doubt. They could have made it a good movie, but it's trash. It sucks.
What is the question again, Wes? Can you refresh? Because we went off the rails on this one.
Yes. So according to Wikipedia, there has only been one movie soundtrack to achieve the title of the best-selling album of the year since the year 2000. And that soundtrack was The Greatest Showman in 2018. Sheet or Sham?
I'm going to go Sham because I feel like I just feel like that wouldn't have been a soundtrack that was like the best-selling. But also, I've not seen that movie, so I don't know. I don't even know what was in that soundtrack. I mean, it could have been incredible. I never heard it, but I just feel like it wouldn't be that movie.
It was okay. My wife really loved it. All right, but it is Sham. There was one other movie soundtrack to do it, and that was High School Musical in 2006.
That makes more sense. I was like, there's got to be another movie. Like, I'm not thinking of one, but of course, High School Musical makes sense. All right, cool.
Why is it Pitch Perfect win? I like that movie. That one should have won. Lots of good acapella music
in
that
one. I don't know what to tell you.
I also like Moana. I hate the movie, but I like some of the songs in that movie.
You hate Moana?
Yeah, I think I did not like the movie at all. But
I've only seen it once, so I don't really have a dog in this fight. I saw it like 4 years ago, and I thought it was fine. I didn't love it.
What's a movie you think sucks?
Ooh, there are movies I think suck. A lot of movies I think suck, actually. What's a movie I've seen recently that sucks? Thor: Love and Thunder is awful. Like, that was one of the first movies, and I'm kind of burning out on the MCU in general, but I saw that last summer, and I was walked out on it. Like, I was like, this movie is just truly, truly bad. I was shocked at how bad it was.
I just want to throw out here, because I realize I don't know that I've thrown this out. Like, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and I realized this the other day that I threw it out on Twitter, and it's like, man, I don't know if people know this about me. Like, I have memorabilia, watched all the movies, read all the books, like, all of that stuff.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. My wife is very embarrassed of me. I owned a house before we got together, and I had a Harry Potter room. Like, I had all the stuff set up. When she moved in, she packed it up and put it away. She's like, I am not dating this nerd with a bunch of Harry Potter stuff in a room. And so my mom and my sister and, you know, my family would buy me these gifts for Christmas, and now it's all just boxed away and for nobody to see, because my wife is like, no. Absolutely not.
Bryce, I feel like there's a photo of you on the internet somewhere of you wearing the wizarding hat and you have like the wand in your hand. Is there a photo? Does this photo exist on the internet somewhere?
No, but you know what there is a photo of? Me as the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz.
What? No way.
So,
did Randy post that?
She does, because Here's the thing. One of her sisters, so Randy is one of five. And if you guys don't know who Randy is, that's my wife. She's one of five sisters. When one of the sisters got married a handful of years ago in Houston, and they literally had a Halloween themed wedding. Like, they were dressed up in Halloween characters. He was Evel Knievel and stuff like that. And so we all had to dress up, and our family, Rani's family, her sisters or mom, dad, whatever, was Wizard of Oz. And I mean, they went all out. I've only had my makeup done one time in my life, and it was for this wedding. So I had the Scarecrow outfit. I had makeup done, all of that stuff. So I'll shoot you the picture after the recording, Omari, as long as you promise not to put it on Twitter.
Cool. You know, I'm not going to put it. I feel like I get painted as like the nerd guy, and I'm not going to say I haven't said or done things that have earned that title. But hearing that you're a huge Harry Potter guy, but I'm also a guy who, like, now granted, I would admit I've never seen the last few Harry Potter movies because I like the books a lot more. But I reread those books a lot when I was younger, and I still am. Like, you know, like it was a big part of my life growing up. So the fact that you're also a Harry Potter guy growing up warms my heart. Like that is something that we are aligned in right there. So there we go.
I love it. Perfect.
Man, I'm finally alone here because I never read the books. I didn't like the movies. I was just out on Harry Potter my whole childhood.
All right, episode's over. You, all of your sheet and sham work is done. We're cutting it. Okay, now, all right, what's the next one?
Hold up, I'm up 2-1, so we got to finish this one.
I think you're up 3-1.
Well, yeah, 3-1.
Oh, okay, cool, 3-1. Yep.
This one's going to you first, Amari. So, the last player to be drafted directly out of high school before the NBA implemented the draft age rule was selected by our Detroit Pistons, sheet or sham.
Ooh, there's like two players I have in mind, one who played for the Pistons and one who did not. And I'm trying to remember who was drafted first. I'm pretty sure that's Sheet.
Yeah, I was going to go Sheet as well. But for the sake of the game, I feel like I have to go Sham. So I'll go Sham. But my honest answer, I would have agreed with Amari.
All right, well, hang on. Both of you go Sheet. But if you can name the player, you'll get the point. It is Sheet.
Do you know who it is, Bryce? I think I know who it is.
I do not.
Amir Johnson.
You know?
Amir Johnson.
It is Amir Johnson.
Nice. Good for you, Amar. Man, you deserve that one.
There we go. Yeah, Amir Johnson is funny because there's a lot of young guys the Pistons had in that era. It's funny because like I teach Pistons fans now for like last one to every young guy. But like I remember like when they drafted Amir Johnson and I remember watching on TV. He was like the 57th pick or something. And I don't know why I was like 12 years old watching the draft that late. Like I was sick, but you know, they were like, yeah, like probably last guy to be taken out of high school before the rule changes, yada yada. And he would play like spot minutes here and there and be pretty good. And I was like, I feel like he's probably an NBA player. Granted, I knew very little about the actual game of basketball and how it's played at that time. But I was right. Amir Johnson played like 15 years. Like I remember he, you know, like when he left the Pistons, he established himself, I think, in Toronto after and was like pretty good. And he ended up playing like a really good 15 years. So, like Amir Johnson was like one of my favorite Pistons in the brief time. He was in Detroit. And he also has a very classic video with Rasheed Wallace, you know, singing a Christmas Carol. So just a fun fact of Pistons lore for those who know.
Yeah, so he went to, you're right. So he had, 4 years in Detroit and then 6 years in Toronto, two in Boston, two in Philly. So what is that, 10, 12, 14-year NBA career?
There you go. I'm like the Amir Johnson historian, apparently. I just recounted this man's attack.
Take that, Keith Black Trudeau. Take that. No, I'm just kidding. Keith is our guy. So, and I know he listens to the pod, so hopefully he gets a laugh out of that.
Next one up, this one is St. Patrick's Day themed. So, Bryce, you first.
Gross.
Corned beef and cabbage. That's a classic St. Patrick's Day dish, but it's an American invention, sheet or sham.
Disgusting. And I will go sham.
I'm going to go sheet.
Didn't you make me eat one of these in Detroit?
Cabbage and beef?
Or maybe we were talking about a restaurant, or not in Detroit, in Denver. Maybe we were talking about it. Yeah, you were trying to take me. Is this gyro? Is that what this is called?
No, that's
it's not a gyro.
Yeah. No, this is entirely different. I'm not necessarily a cabbage. I like corned beef. I'm not a huge cabbage guy, so I would never advocate anybody to. I don't dislike cabbage. That's just not when I think of something I'm going to eat, I'm never going to be like, I want some corned beef and cabbage. Like, that's just not me. But I'm going to go sheet. I'm no St. Patty's expert. You know, in fact, I probably didn't know anything about the holiday towards Michigan State. And it was like the Super Bowl at Michigan State. I'm just going to go sheet because I know a lot of dishes that we associate with other cultures were actually invented here. And that seems like one of the ones that would be. Like a lot of people think like they eat orange chicken in China, but nope, that's American. So I'm just going to go sheet.
You are right. It's sheet, but it's kind of a technicality because the Irish apparently eat ham, not corned beef. So it's ham and cabbage.
Corned beef is actually like Detroit has foods that are not like necessarily known as like local foods, but then you go to other cities and it's actually pretty hard to find. Corned beef is a food that you find all over Detroit that you can't easily find in other cities, but in Detroit it's more just corned beef sandwich than corned beef and cabbage. I don't know where you get corned beef and cabbage, but I can name like three corned beef spots that are really good.
I'm not interested.
That was a really good comedic pause before you said I'm not interested.
Well, I had to look up what gyro, like obviously I'm all over the place with my food stuff. So, cause I had to look up what gyro was. So like, I'm like trying to figure out what I was thinking and where I'm at. And yeah, I'm way off. So can we move on to non-food talk?
Yes. All right. This is Michigan College's one. Bryce, you first. So the University of Michigan was the first agricultural college in the United States. Is that sheet or sham?
Sham.
I'm going to go sham too. I don't actually have any reason to do this except pettiness, because Michigan State's known as the agricultural college. I don't know if they were the first. I just feel like we're known as a farm school, so I just have to deny the University of Michigan that honor. So, sham.
I'm kind of upset that you didn't just know that offhand, Amari. It is sham. It was Michigan State.
All right, there we go. I was pretty sure. I was like, I know that we are known as that, but I didn't know for a fact that we were the first one. Because like you go across the Big Ten and like almost all the schools like kind of feel like farmy, like Ohio State's in Columbus, so that doesn't feel that way. But you know, like Big Ten, like that's just like you have all these big 6'11" dudes.
I will tell you this, like
farm country.
I don't associate the University of Michigan or Michigan State with agriculture nearly even close to the same way I do Iowa, Iowa State, Nebraska, Kansas State. Like, I'm just going to say fair. That. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah. Like Michigan I said, I, like, I knew, yeah, I knew we were the farm school. I just, but I did, like, my Michigan State orientation, they probably told us, like, yeah, we were the first farm school. You know, I was like 11 years ago. So, you know, never came up a whole lot while I was in school. Like, you know, we were the first farm school. I just knew we were one of the original farm schools.
Have you ever been in a tractor?
I've not ever, not to my knowledge, I have not. Like, there are no tractor moments that single in my mind in my lifetime. So I'm just going to say no.
How close have you ever been to a cow?
Pretty close. Like, so, you know, like I was.
Not at a zoo.
No, yeah, no. Like I have been. So I did an urban farming apprenticeship when I was in high school, between my junior and senior year. And one of the farms we went to had farm animals. So they had chickens. I think they had one cow, stuff like that. I've been around cows in other areas of my life. See, I don't know when I'd have to sit back and think of all the cow moments I've had in my 28 years, but there's been at least one. I can't remember that one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
That was also a long time ago. So
we're jumping back to St. Patrick's Day on this one. Right. Amari, we'll ask it to you first. So there's a classic Disney Channel movie, St. Patrick's Day themed. I say classic sarcastically. It's called The Luck of the Irish, in which the hero defeats an evil leprechaun in a game of basketball and then banishes him to the shores of Lake Erie. Is that sheet or sham?
Sounds like an awesome movie.
Sounds like a fake movie. I've never seen that.
No, that's a real movie. It's sheet.
It is a real movie.
You know what's funny? So I know there's a Futurama episode called The Luck of the Irish, but I didn't know it was based off of a Disney movie called The Luck
there's
of the Irish.
There's a what episode?
Futurama. You never seen Futurama?
Never watched it either.
No. Really?
No.
Oh, that's crazy. All right. I don't know. I'm just going to say sheet. I have no clue.
It is sheet. That is the actual end resolution to that plot of that movie. I couldn't pass up the chance to go basketball, Great Lakes, and St. Patrick's. Excuse me. St. Patrick's Day in one question. This is too much.
When is St. Patrick's Day? When is this coming?
I don't even know.
Okay.
It's coming up. It's sometime this month. My wife's excited about it.
Yeah. I never know because it's during the season. So I never know when holidays are in the middle of the season because I'm probably going to be working during them. So I don't even check.
All right. We got to shut it down. Wes, thank you. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We know we got a little bit away from basketball on that one. This time of year, sometimes it's fun to do that. Always big shout out, Wes. Thank you. We will be back next week with Matt Babcock of Cerebro Sports, recently of Draft Digest. He's all over the place. We'll talk some more NBA draft and just this team in general, what they did and didn't do at the deadline, what they can and cannot do this offseason, which should be a really great episode. Amari, take it away, my guy.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening in this week. We'll close it out. Big thanks to our producer, Robin Chan, our executive producer, Antoinette Delgado, and our sports editor, Kirkland Crawford. Also, shout out to Wes Davenport, as always. We'll talk to you all next week.